Well, we've now come to the point where we're hitting the decisive part of Jesus' ministry as presented in all the Gospels, and that is the final week Jesus spent in Jerusalem. It's an important presentation that we're dealing with, and it represents the combination of several events. And I wanted to overview it before we go through the individual pieces, because the key pieces themselves very much connect. And if we lose sight of the connection, we actually risk missing something of what's going on. And of course, the last week begins with what is often called the triumphal entry. I'm going to argue later that we really should see it as the a-triumphal entry, that it's an entry in contrast to the way in which a Roman leader or another major social luminary would have entered a city and the expectations that would have come with that. But in this act, which is fundamentally messianic in terms of what Jesus is doing, and even in the way the disciples treat it, because as he enters into the city, they're praising God for his kingdom, for the hope of the line of David, that kind of thing. This initial messianic note gets us started in terms of what it is that the events of the week are about. From there, Jesus immediately goes to claim the temple as his territory in the cleansing of the temple. When we get to that event, we'll have a long discussion, a very involved discussion, in fact, and a very complex discussion between whether Jesus enters the temple to declare the fact that God is going to destroy it, or he enters the temple to declare the fact that God is going to cleanse it, or he enters the temple to declare the fact that God's going to do both, which is an interesting one of these interesting dilemmas that we've seen throughout Jesus' ministry, where questions are posed as an either-or that might just end up as a little bit of a both-and. But he's claiming authority over the most sacred spot in the world as far as a Jewish person is concerned. And when he claims authority over the most sacred spot as far as a Jewish person is concerned, what is he also intimating about himself in making that move? After this, we get a series of disputes that come to pass. These series of disputes deal with a wide variety of issues. Everyone kind of gets to take their shot at Jesus. He's asked a political question, you know, should we pay taxes to Caesar or not? He's asked a religious question. Whose wife will a woman be who's gone through seven brothers? Call her the Black Widow of Death. Because she's a killer for the family. And so, you know, whose wife will she be on the other end of the resurrection? Jesus tells a parable that overviews the history of Israel. And Jesus asks a question at the beginning of these disputes when he's asked, by what authority do you do these things? His counter question is, by what authority did John the Baptist do what he did? The climactic controversy in this discussion is Jesus is raising the very, 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 very important Psalm 110:1. That was emphatic. And that psalm is going to dress up everything that goes on in the last week around itself as kind of the commentary of what's going on. The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. What exactly does that mean? Jesus poses the dilemma in the midst of the controversy. He doesn't answer the question, leaves it open-ended, but he comes back to it at his Jewish examination and sets the scene for what his death is going to mean by doing so. Eventually, we get to the betrayal of Judas. Not only do we get to the betrayal of Judas, but we get to the arrest of Jesus. But before we get to the arrest of Jesus, we have one final meal in which he lays out the demands of discipleship, has the Last Supper, and lays the groundwork for what becomes the Lord's table, in which he takes one opportunity, one final opportunity, to discuss the significance of what his death means for those who choose to share in it and identify with it. So that obviously is a very important scene, because Jesus tips his hand as to what he is preparing to go through as he goes through his crucifixion. We go through two major examinations of Jesus. One fundamentally religious, coming from the Jewish leadership, probably not a trial in the technical sense. So when we hit that event, I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about the background and particularly some of the ways in which the background is not appropriately applied because the wrong kind of event is in view. As I will suggest, this is not a trial in the formal sense because the Jews don't have the authority to execute Jesus. Only Rome could crucify. It's more like a grand jury investigation. Can we gather together the evidence to take to Rome so Rome will crucify Jesus? By the way, the strategy is an interesting one because in seeking to crucify Jesus and getting Rome to crucify Jesus, the Jewish leadership ends up being protected on either end of Jesus' death. They arrested Jesus because one of his disciples betrayed him and said he needs to be arrested. They crucified Jesus not because they have a responsibility in crucifying Jesus in terms of indirectly being responsible for the death, but because Rome chooses to crucify Jesus for what was probably sedition. So the Romans are responsible on the other end. That's what is called deniability. And so these events unfold in a way in which the religious charge, blasphemy, is translated into a political charge when Jesus gets before Pilate. If they had gone to Pilate with the charge of he's blasphemed, Pilate wouldn't have cared. But if you say he's appointed himself king, he's disturbing the peace, he's told us not to pay taxes, now all of a sudden Pilate's engaged. That's what his job was all about. The decision, of course, is made to crucify Jesus. We get the portrayal of the crucifixion, and then ultimately we get the resurrection and the empty tomb with the women witnesses and everything that comes with it. That everything about the last week screams one word: authority. Everything about the disputes that we are seeing. Jesus is making a claim on the city when he marches on the back of the donkey. Jesus is making a claim about righteousness and the nature of the city and the spiritual state of the city when he cleanses the temple. Jesus is claiming authority when he suggests that God will vindicate him using Psalm 110:1. Jesus warns the nation about what they are contemplating doing when in the parable he suggests that the father who sends the son who ends up being rejected and killed by those who own the vineyard, that they will be judged by the one for having done this. That's a warning to the city. Jesus emphasizes, one event I haven't talked about yet, is the Olivet Discourse that comes in the middle of this week, in which Jesus emphasizes the risk to the nation of covenantal rejection, the fact that the temple will be destroyed in the short term, the chaos that comes before the return of the Son of Man, ultimately in the end, in what is probably should be regarded as a pattern prophecy in which the short-term events leading to the destruction of the temple also mirror or pattern what the end time is going to look like and the chaos associated with the end time before the Son of Man comes back to bring God's justice and to gather the elect. That's also obviously about authority. The challenge about at the Jewish trial when he says, you know, regardless of what you do to me, God's going to vindicate me and seat me at his right hand. That's about authority. And the empty tomb is all about authority. Because when the tomb goes empty, the question is, where did he go and how did it happen? And so what we are seeing in the last week is the presentation of Jesus not just as Messiah, but also as Son of Man, who comes back on the clouds and judges, an image of divinity, and Lord, the one who's able to sit with God in heaven. Remember I said earlier, in the earlier session, that Messiah is the base off of which Jesus builds. And he builds off the base by pointing to the Son of Man who not only suffers, but now rides the clouds. And he builds off the base by not only talking about Jesus as the Messiah, but the Lord who sits at the right hand of God by God's invitation. No one can sit with God unless God invites him. So that's the picture of the last week. It enhances the messianic portrait of Jesus. It enhances the buildup of the messianic portrait to be more than a Messiah. It sets up the problem of where Jesus is and how he's ministering now. In light of a seeming absence, he's not absent at all. He's quite present with us through the Spirit. There are riddles all the way through the last week. you know, what's going to happen with the temple? How in the world can the Messiah suffer? How does that work? All those kinds of ideas. What in the world was God doing when he picked John the Baptist to minister outside official circles? And what in the world is God doing when he has Jesus minister in a similar kind of context? What is it that we say about Israel when we compare them to wicked tenants? What is it that we say about the authority of the kingdom and the way it operates when we say, pay your taxes to Caesar, but render unto God the things that are God's? What is it that we're saying when David calls his descendant, in fact, not just his son or his grandson, but his great, 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 great grandson, Lord, in a patriarchal society? How does that work? And how does that riddle get unfolded? What does it mean for the temple to be destroyed? And what does it mean for the nation to be gathered? What reasons stand underneath the crucifixion and who is responsible? Maybe the question to ask is, who isn't responsible? And what does it mean for the tomb to be empty and for women to testify to the fact that God did what Jesus said God would do? And what does that mean? All these things await us in the walk through the last week of Jesus' ministry. It will be a full set of sessions dealing with just a touch of theology, a little pinch between your cheek and gum about the historical Jesus as revealed in the last week of Jesus' life. That's what lies before us.